idolatry. Now just keep that in the back of your mind, okay? Because they did not eradicate all the idols out of the land. They made compromise with the nations around them. They started worshiping their idols. And God sees that as spiritual adultery because there's only one and true and living God. And so after warning them time after time, he finally takes them to captivity. And we see these young boys, they were boys, handsome, smart. They're put into the king's service. And they still keep their faith. And we looked at that in chapter 1. Chapter 2, we saw that King Nebuchadnezzar had this crazy dream. And it so troubled him, he caught all the magic men, all the soothsayer, all the wise men, and said, interpret this dream. And they said, well, tell us what it was, and we'll give you an interpretation. Now, he was smarter than that. He says, what? What did he want? You tell me what my dream was, then I'll know that you can interpret it. That's pretty savvy, isn't it? So no one could do that. And he said, nobody can do that but a God. So he says, that's it. You're all going to be put to death. Well, that includes who? Daniel. So when they come to get Daniel, like, what's this all about? He says, you tell the king, I will give him an interpretation. So he goes and talks to his three friends, said, pray to God for us that we can save our people, that God will reveal the dream to me and also its interpretation. God does that. And there was this great statue, remember, that he dreamed of, the head of gold, chest of silver, belly and thighs of bronze, and then iron legs, and the feet were mixed with iron and... So as it went from beautiful gold, silver, it just deteriorated in its material until iron and clay doesn't mix well, does it? In other words, if you've got a base that is brittle, the whole thing is subject to... That's right, collapsing, okay? Some people want me to trip over this blue cord. They're on record because they want to turn it into the world's funniest videos and collect money just to see me in pain. But I have solid, ground I'm standing on, just by the way. I don't know why I went there. Okay, we say that Babylon is the head of gold, and he's given them an historical outline what's going to happen. They're going to be succeeded by who? The Medo-Persian Empire, followed by the Greeks, Alexander the Great, and then finally the Romans are going to conquer them. But just as this feet were brittle, a stone's going to hit it, a stone made without hands, and the whole statue is going to collapse, symbolic of all those nations who are going to be scattered like dust in the wind. What will happen to that small stone? It'll grow and cover a mountain, covers the whole world. And so we see that here the Babylonian Empire was succeeded by the Medo-Persians, by the Greeks, and by the Romans. And verse 44 is the one we have to finish on. In the days of those kings, what's God going to do? Very important. Set up his kingdom. All right? It's a kingdom that will never be destroyed, unlike these kingdoms of men. They were world empires, the Babylonian all the way through the Roman. But in the days of those kings, God's going to set up his kingdom, and it'll endure forever. So if we did a timeline, and here's the cross. So from the very beginning, you had some three succinct ages. First, God spoke directly to the fathers, Abraham, Noah, directly. And we call that the age of the patriarchs, right? Patriarchs. There's an I in there, isn't there? All right. So, and then after that, he raised up a nation promised to Abraham. And this nation was who? The children of Israel. We know them as the Jews. And so that was the age of Judaism, right? That he spoke to one nation through prophets. And he dealt with one nation exclusively, God did, and had a covenant law with them. And so we're going to find that he says, in the last days, and we're going to see this phrase coming up. So if we turn this statue on edge, here's the Babylonian Empire that's taking Israel into captivity. They'll come out of captivity when the Medo-Persians conquer Babylon and let them go back to Israel. But they're going to be followed by the Greeks and by the Romans. But in these last days, what are the last days referred to? Some people say it's the last days of the world.
New dispensation.
All right, but the first and simplest explanation is always the right one. Because if he's talking to the nation of Israel, saying, your covenant is coming to an end. I'm going to set up a new kingdom. You were my kingdom, but I'm going to have a new kingdom. This is the old covenant. We're going to have a new covenant. This kingdom has to come to an end, and they're going to have their last days, the last days of this nation. Just like this period came to an end, this period is going to come to an end, and then we're going to come what we call the Christian age, which we're currently in, where God did set up his kingdom, and it is referred to as the church here on the earth, but it's spiritually the kingdom of heaven, or the kingdom of God. And when did it come about? When that stone hit and destroyed the last world nation, which was the Roman Empire, right? And it's in the days of those kings that that stone grew into a mountain that was God's eternal kingdom. Now, there's what it says. Let's try to make some sense of it biblically, okay? So there's the stone. I'm suggesting it's the kingdom of Christ that was set up in the church. And so when we look at it, what are the latter days? Let's look at a couple texts in Mark chapter 2 and verse 17. Look in there. If you see that, that's where... I'm skipping that one. Acts chapter 2. Yeah, what did I say?
Mark
2. Oh, I said Mark 2. I read the Mark and then went to 2. Sorry. Acts chapter 2. Peter is going to preach the first gospel sermon because he's told he's going to give the keys to the kingdom. Remember Jesus said that? So the Holy Spirit falls upon the apostles and gathers this crowd around, and they're wondering, knowing what's going on. And so he says, give heed to my words, verse 14. And he says, verse 17 or 16, this is what the prophet Joel spoke of back here in the days of Israel. That verse 17, it shall be in the last days, God says, he'll pour forth his spirit upon all mankind. Now, when did that happen? The spirit. Right there after the cross. And so Peter says, we are in the last days of the world. In the last days of the Israel nation, the Jews, because they're going to come to an end in 70 AD. So we know that's the last days. Look at Hebrew chapters 1. The Hebrew writer speaking to Hebrews or people of the Jewish nation, that look what he says in verse 1. God, after long ago, spoke to the fathers, way back here, right? And in the prophets, in many ways and portions, in many ways, in these last days. Well, what last days were they speaking of? Right here, the same last days that he has now spoken to us through his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, whom he made the world. So Jesus came in the last days. Now, Mark chapter 1 does say, Jesus says, the time is fulfilled. Repent, because the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Now, let me just ask you this. If Jesus comes on the scene right here before the cross and says the time is fulfilled, the kingdom is at hand, do you think you could expect to see the kingdom come shortly?
Yes.
Or else Jesus is a failure and a fraud. And so also look at Mark chapter 9. When you ask about the specific timing of that kingdom, how close is near or at hand? So I'm looking for someone with their Bible open because they can read for me. Oh, that's Gary. You got it? Chapter 9, verse 1. Okay, they're wondering when the kingdom is going to come. So Jesus says, there's some of you, if I was Jesus, when's he talking? Before the cross or after the cross?
Before.
He's talking right here before the cross. So let's put all ourselves, we're before the cross with Jesus. Gary can be Jesus. All right? He's saying what? Some of you sitting here, because you're all sitting, will not taste of death. What does that mean?
You won't die
until after what?
You see the kingdom come.
You get to see the kingdom come with power. So what does that mean to any common sense person? When did the kingdom come? During their lifetime, before they died, well, of course, that's what happened when the Holy Spirit came on them with power. So when did the kingdom that he's speaking of, the stone, grow into an eternal kingdom? What time period did that happen? It had to happen right here in AD 33. You say, well, what's this stone thing then? That's a fair question. What is the rock? Matthew chapter 16, Jesus said, who do you say that I am? Peter said, thou art the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said, that's right. And upon this rock, what's he speaking of? Himself. That I'm not just a man, I'm God. I'm going to build my church, and I'm going to give you, Peter, the keys of the kingdom. Because the time is fulfilled, right? So we're going to see that here, this is Matthew 21, Jesus speaking to the Jews. Have you not read the scriptures? The stone which the builders rejected became the cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it's amazing in our eyes. He's quoting Psalms 118. Who does he identify as the stone that was rejected?
Himself.
He came to save the Jews. Did they accept him largely? No, they killed him, rejected him, the Son of God. That's all God's plan. So he said, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you, and it'll be given to a people that produces fruit of it. And those that fall on this stone, who is the stone?
Jesus.
What will happen to them? Broken to pieces and will crush whoever it falls. Isn't that the picture of the statue to Nebuchadnezzar? The stone comes in and crushes everybody that doesn't accept him. Same thing today. If Jesus is who he said he was, the Son of God, then we better believe in him. If he's not who he said he was, he's a fraud, right? He's a liar, or else if he thought he was and he wasn't, he's a lunatic. So there's no real middle ground. You can't just say, oh, he was a good teacher, a good philosopher. He claimed to be God. Either he is, and then you'd be crazy not to follow him, or else he's a fraud or a lunatic, and you would be crazy then to follow him. It's kind of a binary choice. Either he is or he isn't. There's none of this, well, if you want to be a Christian, that's good. No. Either we're fools or we're the only smart people in the world. Does that make sense? All right. That's what's being claimed here. How did Daniel know all these events 700 years before it happened? This timeline of history and everything? Inspiration. Okay, you had your hand up. That's right. We're wasting our time.
But he proved it with the resurrection that there is hope.
Yeah, there's no reason for life, even for that matter, on this earth. So Isaiah says he will become a stone, a sanctuary, a stone, and one strikes against for both the house of Israel. He will become a rock, one stumbles over, a trap, a snare for the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So there it again. We see it again. So Daniel is rewarded because King Nebuchadnezzar says, you know, this is an amazing dream. You answered it correctly. And then here, is he somewhat now a believer?
Yeah.
Surely your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery. Now,
well, he's separating him. He's not necessarily a believer.
All right, thank you. But he's the God of gods, because all my people couldn't do this. But your God could. Now, chapter 3, he's going to learn a little more about his God. And then it's getting to get better in chapter 4, because he's going to have a real awakening, Nebuchadnezzar, about who's really in charge. Yes? Right.
That even in acknowledging the unknown,
That's right.
Now, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, was kind of the predecessor of that thought process.
Right? That's right.
He
yeah.
God as God, but as God of all of his more minor gods.
That's right. Yeah. Anybody else? Okay.
No, I was just bringing up, you know, he did homage. He fell on his face and did homage to Daniel.
Yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar wasn't a person who would have just casually done that. That was something that
he's moved.
Would have never done. Nobody, you know, he didn't bow to anybody. Everybody bowed to him.
Good point. He's only just conquered the whole known world.
Yeah.
And then to pay homage to a guy that he knows Daniel is a man of an amazing God. Yes, good point. John.
Doesn't the book of Daniel then say because of this statement that he makes as a king, that God does bless him? I think you and I talked about that a couple weeks
yeah.
ago. And then his successor with the next kingdom, he had the same attitude towards Daniel as God.
Yeah.
May not have been complete, as Gary said, but because of his observance of God and respect he gave to him, both kings were blessed by God.
And it's interesting, John, we were talking about it last week, God blesses people that acknowledge him, even though he doesn't necessarily save them. But and also he blesses, I think, people who have righteous people in them. Because Daniel's a righteous person, and so other people get blessed around him. You see that through Abraham and through Esther, and it's true in our lives. People around us will be blessed because of your relationship with God. It's a beautiful thing. Oh, yeah, they're going, who, you saved your life, and who are you that could do this?
Yeah.
Right, good point. All right, so I had to see that. The king promoted Daniel, gave him great gifts. These are the blessings that John's referring to, made him rule over the whole province. But Daniel's not going to forget his free friends, so he appointed them as well as administrators in the province of Babylon. So the Daniel's at the king's court. They're serving at a lower level. Who's their boss? Daniel. All right. Just amazing that these slaves come in down into Babylon and now they're ruling. Okay. And we saw that with Moses, you know, becoming second in Pharaoh's court. We saw that with, Joseph becoming second in Pharaoh's court. All right. So now we're going to talk about faith under fire. We all know the story. And it's about the three administrators, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They get in some big time trouble. But there's some obstacles for us to really feel the impact of the story, and it's in your handout, but it's familiarity, and it's all because it's so fantastic, we start to think it's a myth. Let me address familiarity, all right? When you do something over and over and over, what happens after a while? Well, familiarity breeds contempt. It doesn't have the appeal that it used to have. You know, it's true with food. If you eat the same food over and over and over, you got to take a break after a while. And my wife, she's not here. And I don't see her. She's got me on a no ice cream diet. I'm really hankering for some chocolate ice cream. So I'm going to get some on the way home. Don't tell her, okay? Little.
Yeah, but she's going to hear this.
No, she won't, all right? So, but if you had ice cream every day for the next week, would it taste good, the eighth serving?
Yeah.
I mean, a carton of Ben and Jerry's. That's what I'm getting. Yeah, he goes, yes. After a while, it's just not as good. But when you haven't had it for a while, you go, oh, man, I want some Ben and Jerry's. All right? Fred Meyer, that's where I'm going afterwards. So don't talk to me after class. So what I'm saying with this, how many times you heard the story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego throwing into the fiery furnace? Oh, yeah, that's a good story. No, this is an amazing story. And we got to just step back and look at it again from a fresh perspective, what's really going on. So the second thing that helps us or keeps us from realizing the true impact of it is, yeah, it's really too amazing. I wonder if it's really true. You know, a furnace seven times hotter than usual. So the people that threw him in, they perished because of the heat. But they were thrown in tied up and they're seen walking around. And then there's a fourth person in them, and they come out, you don't even smell smoke on them. Not a hair is singed. Oh, yeah, it's a good story. It's like a fairy tale, an Aesop's fable, just to teach us a lesson. Now, you say, well, no, I believe it's true. Do we?
Yes.
Are we totally convinced? Let's just proceed with that. This is the first time we've heard it, and everything we're seeing is true. Because if God could create the heavens, the earth, and if he could send his son and have him raised from the dead, could he have all these events happen?
Yes.
Most certainly. Okay. So with that being said, we got to go through it quickly because there's a lot of material here. Nebuchadnezzar makes an image of gold, and it's 60 cubits high, 6 cubits wide. It's all of gold, probably gold-plated, like the gold man on the Capitol building. He's the pioneer man, gold-plated, real thin. Where do you think he got his inspiration for this 60-foot or 90-foot tall statue? Probably the dream, because who's the head of that statue that he dreamed of? Well, it was me, all right? And it's gold, so he makes the whole thing gold. Now, they ask him, why is he doing this? Perhaps because he realizes, this is all speculation, so we don't know for sure, that's a brittle statue. And if I know history's going to play out, that all these kingdoms are going to fall, I want to solidify my rule, so I'm going to get everybody that I've conquered, all these magistrates, all these administrators, and they're all going to come, and we're going to worship one God, the God I set up, so we can be a united nation that will never fall. Some have suggested that's what he's trying to do. Now, wait, if God said it's going to happen, what are you trying to do to undo it? You can't do it, but he hasn't learned that yet. He still has a lot of ego, okay? So he sets it up in the plain of Dura. If here's Babylon, Dura is south. They look at it, and it's these plains past this river, the Euphrates there, the Tigris, okay? They found ruins. They dig up some of his castles, and it's really quite amazing what you'll see there. So here is his gold man, perhaps on a pedestal, and I want to give you a frame of reference. This is almost the scale as best as I could do. Here's the Statue of Liberty, 151 feet tall, 46 meters. That's from the base up. So Nebuchadnezzar's man, who's 90 feet tall, is pretty tall, isn't it?
Yep.
Now, our pioneer guy on state capitol, you know how tall he is? I had to look it up. You think he's like there, right here. He's only 23 feet tall. He's a little guy. But he's up there and he looks really tall, doesn't he? So is this kind of a huge thing going on? All right, JC? Right. On those plains. The best thing in Sunday morning was I come up over the bridge from West Salem into Salem is this. I don't remember where I was. Over the bridge. The sun's rising and hits that gold man, just what you're talking about. And it's just, it's so beautiful. So can you imagine that with the sun hitting it? And it's all to honor him and probably unite these nations under him. So he says, here's the command. Here's his decree, the rules of worship. This chapter breaks down into five sections where it says, Nebuchadnezzar said, right? Well, I think we had that earlier. No, we don't. But here it is. When you hear these instruments play, he mentioned these instruments three times. And Daniel doesn't give a lot of specifics, so there's a lot of questions. Why is he mentioning these specifically? Well, they're instruments from all around the world, so maybe he's bringing people and trying again coalesce and unite all these fragmented countries that he's ruling over into one solid nation. But soon as you hear the music, the moment, and the word in the Hebrew is just, soon as you hear it, you go down. I'm not just waiting like, oh yeah, stop talking. I guess we better bow now. As soon as you hear it, what are you? Bowing. And you worship the golden image Nebuchadnezzar and the king has set up. Now here's the penalty. Whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast in the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. They had, and they found things like this, furnaces that were really quite tall where they could smelter or melt glass, bake pottery, but also iron, because they were making iron things and steel. And so you have to have those kind of foundries really, 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 really hot. And usually they were cone-shaped. You'd feed them from the bottom and have air drafted. But the smoke would come out the top. So likely the penalty was you would be taken to the top where all the heat's roaring out and you'd be dropped in from the top. What, is that a certain death? Yeah. All right. So is there any wiggle room in this command?
None.
Quickly.
They weren't naturally aspirated. They had blowers on them.
Okay. Okay. We can check that one out. Thank you. All right. So, no, I really believe it, all right? So the people, when they heard the sound, and there it is, mentions all of them, the people, nations of men of every language, fell down and worshiped. Now, I didn't read this, but I want you to look in Daniel 3. What kind of people did he gather? Did you notice that? Daniel 3 and verse 3. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the province were assembled for dedication of the image. What kind of people is he out there for this big ordination ceremony? All the ruling class. He's trying to get them all under line in subjection to him. Under the threat, worship my God or what? You die. See how he's trying to control every province, every region. And so, as soon as they hear the single, what are all these dignified people doing? As soon as they hear the music, poof, worshiping. Except who? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. All right. So, there are certain Jews. The guy comes into the king and says, whom you appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you set up. Now, here's what's ironic. Why are the Jews in Babylonian captivity in the first place? We mentioned it right before. Because of idolatry. I mean, in their homeland, when they're free, they're worshiping all sorts of idols. But now when they get in captivity, what do these three individuals refuse to do?
Worship idols.
Now, would there have been a lot of peer pressure to do so?
Sure.
All their fellow judges, satraps, prefects, and all that were worshiping. There's a threat of death, certain death. You're away from home. Who's going to know anyway? We're just going to bow down one time. What's the big deal? Because in my heart, God knows I love him. You could rationalize very easily. Well, God's forsaken us. We're down here as slaves. Very easily just to say, I'll just do it this one moment. And the reason I know that, because I have rationalized that type of behavior before and bow down to the idol of my choice. It might not have been a golden image, but it was something else that I coveted. Don't we do that kind of rationalization process, each of us? Like, no one will know, it doesn't matter, it's just one time. But yet these three young men, remember they're young men, like your guys' age, seriously. That's the way he described them. They said, no, we're going to have none of that. They refused. Now the king likes these kids, so he's going to give them a second chance. So here's what happens. Now, I'm going to ask the question, is it defiance or faithfulness? And we'll come back to that in a second. So the Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring him before the king. And so when he gets there, the first thing he asks him, he says, is it true? So after what I've done for you guys, is it true? Is that really the way you're treating me? Did you really not bow down? He said, we're going to do it again. So I'm going to set it up. We're going to play the music, and if you will not worship, you will be immediately cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. And here's the big question. What God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? Who said that before?
Pharaoh.
Hezekiah, when he was approached by King Sennacherib, sent one of his messengers, says, see all the people surrounding you? What kind of God do you have that's going to deliver you out of my master's hands? Did God show him who he was?
Yeah.
85,000 killed that night. Did Pharaoh learn?
Yeah.
But see, men don't learn that. They don't recognize and they don't honor who the God and Lord of Lords is. And then really that's our challenge, is to put him in his rightful place, how big and powerful he is. You say, well, he used to do those things. He doesn't work that way now. So we think we serve a weak God. Well, there's the question. Well, we're going to find out. So here's a picture of what it might have looked like. That's probably a good rendition of it. So I love this answer. We're in verse 16. I'm going to read it and then we'll talk about it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king. I would suggest this was respectful, but just to the point. O Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to give you an answer concerning this matter. What? If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. We're not worried about that. And he will deliver us out of your hand. That's a direct answer to his question. Who, what God can deliver you out of my hands? Our God will. Oh, king. But even if he doesn't, let it be known to you, king, we're not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image you have set up. Now, how is he going to take this? Defiance and rebellion and rejection. And, well, what does it say happens right here coming up? He was filled with wrath so much his face, whole expression was altered. Have you ever seen your mom that mad that her face changed? All right, I shouldn't go there. But this guy is angry, isn't he? Yes.
But I think he's also reflecting upon what happened with Daniel and the interpretation of his dream. And he's considering the fact that this is that God that was able to do that. Still yet in defiance.
You think he is?
I think so.
Because if he's thinking about it all, he wouldn't have responded this way. Well, he's just...
Why give him a second chance?
Well, once he hits the answer, maybe initially, but when he hears the answer, they're not going to relent. Well, he is just, forget that God. I'm going to show you who's in charge.
But he was I'm confident he was mindful of what God had done in that dream.
Maybe before, to some extent.
He gives them a second chance because they wouldn't even get that chance.
Only because he likes them, that's right.
And then they hear what they had to right. say.
Do you think he believes that, that their God's going to deliver him?
Well, I think he's skeptical of it.
Well, we're going to heed it seven times more. We're going to get my valiant warriors, and we're going to tie them up and cast them into the fire. We're going to show you who's in charge here.
Well, yeah.
He's indignant, right?
He has to prove a point because he has to show everybody else.
Oh, because, good point. Who's still gathered all around? Magistrates, precepts, rulers, they're all still there. And this whole scene is playing out in front of them. So he's lost control of his big dedication ceremony and kind of consolidate his power and his rule. He has to make an example of them, regardless if he likes them or not. Right? Point well made. Yes.
Do you know where Daniel is?
Good question. Where's Daniel? Daniel is absent from this chapter. Some people suggest he's writing it, so he left himself out of it. Maybe he was excused. We don't know. Don't have an answer. It's a great question. Don't have an answer. Yes?
I mean, we have indication, though, because if you're in the king's court, I mean, you're going to have to be present for this ceremony.
Well, then he's got to be bowing down, too. So if you get him there, you have to have him bowing or standing so he'd be with the three. So I would guess he's not there for some reason. I don't know. Maybe he's on some trip. I don't know. We just cannot speculate because guess what?
We don't know.
All right. But it's a great question. And a lot have been written about where's Daniel? We don't know. That's right. When we get there. Daniel, where were you? I was standing in the back. I didn't bow. I was behind the king. All right. Okay. By the way, see down here at the bottom? I didn't read it, but when the guys cast them in, and again, probably from the top, not from the front, like this is an artist rendition so we could see them. The valiant warriors that dropped them in, they perished because the fire was that hot. Isn't that what the text says? And so then we're skipping a couple of verses to verse 24. Then Nebuchadnezzar, king, was astounded. And he stood up in haste and responded and said to his high officials, was it not three men we cast bound in the midst of the fire? And they said, well, certainly, O king, that's right. When he answered and said, look, I see four men loosed, they're not bound anymore, walking about in the midst of fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like the sons of gods. Some version says the son of God, singular. Now, first of all, we're talking about heat that were like several thousand degrees. So as soon as you're dropped in, what happens? Right? I mean, this is the kind of fire that you use to cremate bodies, okay? They're walking around, and they're just like, nothing's going on, talking to each other, whatever. And you say, you have to understand how magnificent this is, because he was so angry and indignant that his face is getting distorted and contorted. And now he's looking at the three with a fourth guy. And who's the fourth guy?
Jesus.
Well, best indication, it's the incarnate or pre-incarnate Jesus. Before he became the Son, it's him. That's what everyone would guess it is. But there's no for sure determination of that. But the angel of God has appeared many times, and we see that through back there in the patriarchs, back here. And it's probably could have been Jesus, all right? But has God delivered them? Absolutely. So we can finish this. I think we have time. So Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of the blazing fire and responded. Now he's calling them by name. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, come out. You servants of the Most High God. Is now his attitude really changed. Come here. So they come out. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, all the people around that he's trying to get to worship his God, they see this, right? They're all witnessing this. And the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men. Not the hair of their head was singed. And their trousers weren't damaged. And you couldn't even smell any fire on them. My wife, every time I'm out there using power tools, especially when you mix oil with it, says, you stink. Take them off right here before you come in the house. Okay. Can you smell that when you've been burning trash? Yes. Not a thing. And that's exactly what happened. And they're all just in awe and amazement. So Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, here's a total different, he's growing in his estimation of who God is. Blessed be the God of Shadrach. Is he Nebuchadnezzar's God yet?
No,
he's still the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Who sent his angel, now he doesn't know who it was, and delivered his servants who put their trust in him. Violating the king's command, yielded up their bodies, as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. He's impressed by this, what he's just seen, and so should he. Now, here are the points I want to see that come out of that. Trusting in God involves violating the king's command. You know what it says? Now, I'm going to suggest it wasn't they're just there to violate. There's another alternative that they're choosing. But are there times where we don't obey the laws of the land? When would that be? Only when what the government is asking you to do violates what God has asked you to do or not do. When they come in direct conflict, you choose to obey God rather than man. Peter said that. We must obey God rather than men. Okay, how about wearing your seatbelt? Well, I don't like that. You can't make me do it. Does that violate any of God's commands?
No.
No, in fact, he says you honor the king and obey the king. So you're violating God's command if you don't wear your seatbelt. How about obeying the speed limit? Paying your taxes? You know, there's lots of commands. We think, well, I don't like that. It goes against my nature. Well, then, yeah, too bad, right? But this does not give you carte blanche rights to just arbitrarily disobey any rule you want from the king. Only when you have to choose between God and man, all right? And sometimes trusting God means you're going to have to sacrifice your life. It says, I don't even care if God delivers or not. We're not going to obey. You have to make a choice. I'm going to come back to that later. We're not going to serve. No way. Doesn't matter what you do. You can't threaten us with anything more than our lives. We're not going to serve. We will not worship, and it's God and God only. Here's the key for a faithful life. It's not determined how many times you come to services. It's not determined how many prayers you pray, how many times you read the Bible. What determines a faithful and a successful and a happy and a joyous life on this earth, a good marriage, a good working career, a good family, is this kind of trust. I'm going to trust God like these three guys. And we're going to deal with that just a little more in a second. Here it is. This is on the back side of your page. First of all, I want to say faithfulness is what they chose. It wasn't burn or bow. See, that looks like the binary choice. Either bow before the king, the idol, or burn. It's either hang on to your faith or compromise because you don't want to get the furnace, right? And so we often think it's just a binary choice. It's either one or, well, okay, I'm going to violate the king. I'm going to suggest they chose faithfulness. We're not here to violate your commands, king. We're here to be respectful citizens. We want to serve you as much as we can, but don't ask us to be unfaithful to our God. There's a hierarchy, and it's God first. You're down there second. And they're choosing faithfulness, not violation, not protest. A lot of people think it's protest. No, it's not. It's faithfulness. Is there a difference? A lot of people protest, and they don't even know why they're protesting, and they think it's in the name of faith. No, faithfulness is different. We'll flesh it out. Faithfulness is never an option. We don't need to give you an answer. I mean, there's nothing to talk about. There's no compromise. There's no negotiating. It's not necessary. We're not going to worship. We don't have to give you an answer. You've already made a decision, and nothing's going to change it. That's faithfulness. In your marriage, until death do I part. Until death does do us part. Boy, that didn't even sound right now. How many weddings have I done and I got it wrong? Is that a commitment of faithfulness?
Yes.
And often it's, well, as long as I'm still happy, I'll stay committed to you. No, faithfulness means what? Until death does separate us. There's no negotiating. I don't care how bad it is. It's for better and for worse. Is it bad for these guys right now? Doesn't matter. They didn't sign up for this, but they don't care. They're not going to bow down and worship. It's faithfulness. Never doubts. Our God, whom we serve, is able. Now, do they know if he will? Now, this is very interesting, because sometimes we want to negotiate. God, if you promise to deliver me, then I'll be faithful. Is that faithfulness? No, that's not faithfulness at all. That's buying. That's negotiating your faithfulness. But they say, I know that he can, but it doesn't matter if he doesn't. We're not going to worship. So it never doubts what our God. He's that big. He's in charge. And it's never conditional. That's the if then. Even if he does not. Let it be known to you, King, we're not going to serve your gods. It's none of this if then. Now, do we do that sometimes? Lord, if you bless me this, I'll really read my Bible more. I'll try harder. Lord, if you do this, what is God looking for? That kind of prayer? Or he's saying, God, I'm going to serve you no matter what. I don't care if all my friends forsake you. I don't care if my wife denies you. I will not turn my back on you because you're that kind of God, right? And then finally, faithfulness is never if then. That's what I said, but it's never conditional. It doesn't require God to do something for you before you obey him. And it's not if you'll do it, then I'll obey you. And finally, faithfulness always, always obeys. And when I say obeys, what was the first and second commandments that all these Jews knew, including Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? No other gods. No graven image. You shall not worship them, because God's a jealous God. They knew that. And they were so faithful, said, not going to do it. Have nothing of it. And so we see that he now makes a new decree. And he started with the decree, you got to worship or die. Now the new decree is, if anyone says anything offensive of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're going to be torn limb from limb, and their house is reduced to a rubbish heap. We'll go after their families. Boy, isn't this a turn? And inasmuch there's no other God who's able to deliver this way. So he caused them to prosper in the province of Babylon. That's faith under fire. I promise you this. You will be in a fiery furnace like that, or face it. Satan is going to put you in it, and God's going to allow it, because he's trying to test your faith. It's easy to serve God in America, generally. It is. Because we got it good. But it's those trials that prove or test our faith. Peter talks about that. So when you feel the heat, and you feel like, man, I feel like I should run or I should bow, you just got to think of this chapter. You're one of those young boys or young ladies, and this is your moment in time to decide if you're going to be faithful to God or not. Are you going to bow or are you going to burn? And you have to make up the decision now, because then it'll be too late. Make it up now forever. I will never forsake you, God. All right. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Thank you.